From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2010 in Madison, Wisconsin, with the launch of an event called Listen to Your Mother. And the idea, pretty simple. Mothers would speak and we would listen. One venue, one performance, a dozen or so moms speaking for 5 or 10 minutes about one particular aspect of motherhood. And this simple idea has spread across the country. This year, roughly 30 cities will hold Listen to Your Mother events. Rochester is one of them, with the third annual Rochester version. 13 mothers will tell their stories on May 13th at the Lyric Theater. And we asked some of them to join us to discuss the various themes of motherhood and preview a little of what we might hear on the 13th and also discuss some of the past themes as well. So let me go ahead and welcome our guests, including a couple of co-directors. One of them is Sarah Fitzgibbons, who is a co-director and helped bring this show to Rochester. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also here is Sally Bittner-Bahn, who is a co-director this year. She was a presenter, a cast member, we officially called, in 2016. Her presentation was remarkable, and we're going to hear some of that coming up here. And she's also the director of youth education at Writers and Books. Sally, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Robin Flanagan was a 2016 cast member. Robin, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Miriam Zinter is a 2017 cast member, so you're going to be hearing from her on the 13th. Miriam, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Evan.
All right, Sarah, you helped bring the program to Rochester 2015. How did that happen? How did this all come about?
I am a transplant here from Colorado, and there was a Listen to Your Mother show in Colorado, too, in fact. And when I moved here in 2012, I thought, gosh, wouldn't this be fabulous for Rochester, a city in which we need more connection and more ways to deepen relationships with each other. I also work for the Society for the Protection and Care of Children as the clinical director, and we're looking for ways to host a meaningful fundraiser for them. So got in touch with Ann Eimig from Madison, Wisconsin, the founder, and she said, gosh, there's another woman, Monica Gabel, who is also interested. She called me this week. Let's put you in touch. So we applied. The first year, we did not get accepted. The second year, we said, gosh, let's apply again. I got a call with an hour-old newborn on my chest, and Monica said, we got in this year. So our first season was in 2015. We had one last year, and then this is our third season.
Okay, and we're going to hear some clips. I've seen a few of the presentations. What's the official term for it, by the way?
The wonderful thing is people from all walks of life come in, and they all call them something different.
Okay.
Somebody from a marketing perspective says it's my speech. Somebody that's a writer says it's my piece. So,
okay, yeah. And you know, so this is almost impossible, but give me an example of a moment or two that has stood out to you from the Rochester events, you know, a comment, an idea, a moment that has stood out to you?
I think there are two. I think standing in the back of the auditorium with between 500 and 650 people in the audience, watching people tell their true stories, being vulnerable, being funny, and saying me too in some way, taking the hand of the person next to them, and then in the lobby afterward, coming up to people who have presented and saying, you've told parts of my story that I didn't even know existed in me. I want to write for next year. So really connecting in that way.
Okay. Well, let me turn to Sally Bittner-Bahn, who is the co-director this year and had a chance to be a 2016 cast member. You know, there's so many different things that that mothers can present about and can talk about. Was it easy for you to decide?
In many ways, yes. You know, I have a son who was diagnosed with a genetic condition at the age of 14 months. And I have been a writer most of my life. And up until that point, I had been writing poetry. And as soon as kind of everything I expected in my future suddenly changed, I realized I needed to learn how to write prose because I had stories to tell. So I've been writing the stories of my son and my journey with motherhood for a number of years now. And I knew I needed to find a way to encapsulate that in about 5 minutes. And so the writing wasn't necessarily easy, but knowing ultimately where it was going was easy.
Can we listen to a clip? Is that all right with you?
Sure.
So in this clip here, I think, if I have it right, your son Oscar is it spinal muscular atrophy?
Yes.
Okay, which is what, by the way?
It's very similar to muscular dystrophy. So it's a condition that weakens his muscles. He uses a power wheelchair, but he is sharp as a whip and the happiest and most social person I know, I think.
And in this clip, she's discussing Oscar driving his power wheelchair for the first time.
Then
There is Oscar's power wheelchair. The first time he sat in it and put his hand on the joystick, he took off. At age 3, beaming ear to ear, he zoomed away. Away into the neighbor's yard, away from his parents. He zoomed across the grass independently, not being pushed by someone else. And then, when he was ready, he came back. One might imagine the occasion of a child getting a first wheelchair to be sad or heavy or difficult for a parent. But for me, that was unequivocally one of the happiest days of my life. And so we soldier on. Yes, we face challenges other parents don't, and that is complicated. But the love I have for my son is not complicated. He is 7 now, and our goal is the same it always has been, to raise a happy, well-adjusted child who is proud of who he is.
Producer Megan Mack sends a note saying, Oscar is indeed all those things. Funny, talkative, and so awesome. Quite the character. So there's an endorsement for you. But can you tell me a little bit more about that feeling? You said for you that was a happy moment.
Yes.
You know, when for others it might have been something different. Tell me more about that.
Yes. I mean, at that point we'd had, you know, probably about 2 years to get used to the idea that ultimately our child was going to be in a power wheelchair. And he'd had 2 years of being in a manual wheelchair that he could just kind of barely push with his hands. And he didn't really have the same independence. He didn't have the same opportunities that toddlers have to get into everything. So that moment that he was finally able to have that true independence was just absolutely glorious.
There's also an idea, I think, that arises from you call it a talk, by the way? Why do I keep doing this? But Sally, what do you call
peace.
It?
Peace.
Your peace?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. There's an idea that arises from that for me, which calls back to a conversation we had with a couple of remarkable people from the local deaf community. One of them who has written a book for hearing people only, helping the hearing community understand, you know, probably etiquette, things like that, but also controversies in the deaf community. And one of them is the idea of cochlear implants. And he makes the point, there's plenty of deaf people who, quote, don't want to be fixed. Don't stop telling me, you know, that this will make it better. I don't feel that I need to be fixed, that I am happy with who I am. And there seems to be this obsession in the hearing community with fixing, you know, those who would have a quote-unquote disability. And I couldn't help but thinking of that conversation as I listened to you and this obsession with either fixing something or should we try to fix this or accept this and love this. Can you tell me more about your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I don't think my husband and I have ever considered our son to be broken in any way or need fixing in any way. And I think that one of the most important things I think I've learned from my son is that walking is not the most important thing that I do. And, you know, we are all made differently, and that's okay.
Do you find that society, even through good intention, has this disposition of, well, what can we do to fix this about this person or, you know, this condition or this medical issue?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. Luckily, because Oscar is so social and loves to meet everybody anywhere, I think he's just naturally, without even knowing it, helping to break those barriers because he approaches people and, you know, engages in conversation in ways that people immediately realize he is absolutely a typical now 8-year-old boy who just happens to drive a power wheelchair versus being some alien creature who doesn't walk.
Yeah, sure. And you say that important lesson of realizing walking is not the most important thing you do. You know, walking is not necessarily central to who we are. as people and how we can impact others and how we can love others. What else have you learned from him?
Oh, my goodness. endless things. He's extremely extroverted and I'm fairly introverted. And so I've learned how to talk to people in different ways and interact with people in new ways. I've learned how to let go of what's not important and laugh and slow down and be in the moment.
What was the response to your piece last year?
A lot of really lovely, overwhelming response that, you know, the power of the show is pretty amazing because it wasn't just that night or in the following week. There were people months later who said, wait a minute, you're familiar to me. I saw you and listened to your mother. Oh, my goodness, your story. And so, I mean, that really speaks to the reach of this show. It really, you know, I'm someone who has been in front of audiences many times sharing writing, but usually in a room with 20 or 30 people. To stand in a room with 650 people and share a story of motherhood is just really powerful, and it has clearly reached powerfully into this community.
You're hearing Sally Bittner-Bond. You can see her presentation now, by the way, right, Sarah? I think you can jump on it. Can you see most or all of the past
ones? Yes, the past two seasons. So, yes, Sally's and all. Just head over to our website.
Which is what?
www.listentoyourmothershow.com/Rochester.
The 2017 event is May 13th. That is two Saturdays from now, 7:30. PM at the Lyric Theater on East Avenue, and tickets available now?
They are available now. Yes, you can find that also at the same link.
Okay. Take your mom, right?
Take your mom, take your friends.
A lot of people probably take their moms. But can you tell us, Sarah, before we talk to Robin and Miriam about their stories, how do you choose? I mean, you only have, 13 people presenting their stories this year? 13 moms? It's a big population locally. How do you choose?
It sure is. We host every year about 45 audition slots, and it is one of my most favorite, and probably Sally's for this year, and the whole production team's favorite part, because we get to hear people come in and tell their stories, and some of our very favorite pieces don't get chosen, although all of the pieces we choose are our favorites. We really craft this quilt. So we're looking for a balance of who's telling the story and from what perspective, and the journey that we take the audience on. Monica Gabel called it a mixtape, which is pretty apt.
Mixtapes are so
mixtape
cool.
Mixtape of motherhood.
Millennials. Yeah. So there were these things called cassette tapes. They still know what mixtapes are, right?
Maybe. Yeah. Hopefully.
Oh my gosh.
Playlist.
Okay. There. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. So sad. But that's a great description, a mixtape. That's beautiful. So this amalgam of ideas, wide range. And I imagine sometimes 45 auditions, maybe sometimes, Sarah, you've got a couple on a really similar topic, but they're great. You've got to make a hard call. That's got to be tough.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Although we've had folks come in who have said this, even just writing down a particular mm-hmm. story was cathartic for them, not to mention reading it in mm-hmm. front of a group of four people who really want to hear it. And so they come and we invite them to have a complimentary ticket to our show. And so they come and connect, and often they audition the next year too, because the process is usually helpful and great for them.
The show's called Listen to Your Mother. This is the third edition in Rochester, but around 30 cities are doing it nationwide. There's a Canadian version, so it's now officially an international event. And so these events are happening around the country. Rochester's version is May 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Lyric Theater. Listen to Your Mother show.com/Rochester, and you can find a lot more there. I want to turn to Robin Flanagan, who was also a 2016 cast member. And before we get to a clip from your performance, why don't you tell me a little bit about your thoughts on what you wanted to put together, and take me kind of through that process too, because again, you had to decide you wanted to do this, and you had to think about what you wanted to share. What was that process like for you?
Well, it came at the perfect time for me. I am a freelance journalist by trade, so I write all the time, but I'm also an essayist and have pieces in literary magazines, and what I've always written in the past were pretty happy stories, even though they had pain woven through. So, for example, if I wrote about my infertility, I would write about the joy of what happened after that, which was the adoption of our daughter. And so I always felt like my pieces were positive. And around the time of the audition, I was really struggling with parenting a tween and my role in that and how I was reacting to that. And it wasn't going so well for me, I have to say. I was really struggling with that. And so knowing that I had a deadline was really important for me. And so that's why I wrote it in the time that I did. And so it allowed me to put on paper all of these feelings I was going through. And it was the first time I truly was honest about certain aspects of myself and my personality on paper. So it was very educational as well.
And this sounds exactly like what Sarah is talking about, that even if you hadn't been selected, it probably would have been a very good exercise for you to go through.
Well, what's funny is that I auditioned this year knowing that I wouldn't get chosen, and I actually didn't want to get chosen because I wanted new people to be part of the cast. But I actually followed up with something that I'm going through now, which was an extension of last year's piece, and it ended up being published the week after I auditioned. So so anyways, it was still a nice gift for me to have that deadline.
As the father of a five-year-old, I think about what he might be like, and I actually said to another parent the other day, I can't even imagine what he's gonna be like at 8, let alone 14. It's very, because you're so invested in the moment and you're so locked into who they are now, it's hard to look down the line. Though I probably would, if you gave me a magic pill, skip the teen years, just jump right to adulthood if I could. You know, so we're gonna listen in a moment here, but are you doing okay?
Yes, we're muddling through. No, things are great. And that's part of what I wrote about in this second piece, is that when you're a tween, you know, what's very dramatic 1 minute, 5 minutes later, you've completely forgotten about it. But yet, as the mom, you're still feeling those reverberations. And what do you do with that? So,
yeah, they can move on easier than we can sometimes. Robin's piece last year, Alone in Her Room, about her adopted daughter, who's now a tween. And this is on how their relationship changes as her daughter is getting older. Let's listen.
Why do I feel threatened by how different we can be? That we lack the same DNA has nothing to do with it. It's more about this cusp we're straddling between then, when I could choreograph her world, and now, when parenting experts and common sense and faith dictate a responsibility to let her grow into the person she is meant to be. I pick up the clump of hair, so soft between my fingers, and rub it against my cheek. I remember when she was 7 and we were walking through a parking lot holding hands. How did I get so lucky that God gave you to me? I asked. She didn't miss a beat. Jessica was lucky to find you. It has always given me a deep sense of peace that she's been able to so articulately appreciate how she belongs in this mysteriously orchestrated world. Does she still? Am I wearing that away like a slow burn?
All right, Robin, so in that piece then, you kind of go on to share a little bit more about what you experienced and how those things are changing. What's the hardest part about this change as you enter this tween, you know, this, because you were a tween at one point. You can at least call back to your own tween years, can't you?
I think I was 15 before the earth shattered for my mother, so.
What's the hardest part for you as a parent?
Really, it's learning about myself and the ways in which I react to situations. And I'm not always proud of that. Not that I get, you know, not that I have outbursts or I'm angry or anything. It's more about how hurt I get. And everybody says don't take it personally, but I do. And even though I know logically that I shouldn't, it affects my attitude. And I'm learning a lot about resilience. You know, going back to her back and forth sort of tween years, you know, her emotions, I'm learning about resilience and about love and about unconditional love. And it's just a beautiful test.
Do you find it challenging in these moments when you have this, yeah, there's ramped up emotions, and then maybe she's moving on, but you're still stung by something? Do you find it a challenge to navigate that question of, is this a moment where I want to follow up with her and sit down and talk it out? Do I let this go? You know, is this a moment where I have to express some level of the hurt, or at least let her know how certain words or ideas have impacted me? Are you pretty good at letting that go now? I mean, how do you pick and choose those moments?
It's really, really funny that you're asking me this question now, because just in the last couple weeks, I've been working really hard on, I'm very much a, well, let's just get this over with. Let's talk about it in the moment. But I'm finding that her personality is not that. And so I'm having to work really hard at taking a break and coming back to her later and talking about something. And I do get rewarded with a person who's willing to listen to me in that moment instead of when
things were heated.
Things are heated, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your personality would be, hey, look, let's tone it down and let's talk this out mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. She needs time. But then you can revisit it. Now, once it cools off, you can follow up and you can have that valuable discussion, that conversation.
Right. And I think my reaction in that time, it's not just that she needs the time. I think that the way I would react in the moment to solve it is probably not the best. So I'm giving myself time, even though I didn't realize I needed it. I think I'm learning that I need that time too.
And what was the reaction from the audience to your presentation?
Oh, it was incredible. I had people crying and coming up and saying that, you know, I know exactly how you feel. You've told my story. And that's why I'd like to write in the first place, is because I feel like there are so many ways in which we're connected. And when you're in groups, whether you've experienced infertility, so you're in that group, or you have a child who is in a wheelchair and you're in that group, I mean, your writing is able to reach people and let them know that they're not alone. And I just think that's so important.
Is it powerful you to hear Sally and all the other presenters share their stories as well?
Very much, and I've heard them more than once, and I still, even when you were playing that little clip, I had goosebumps all over my body listening to hers. It never goes away.
Well, you can hear and watch Robin and Sally and the previous iterations of the presentations for Listen to Your Mother Rochester events. If you go to the website, I found them through YouTube, easy to find, but listentoyourmothershow.com/Rochester. The 2017 event's coming up at the Lyric Theater two Saturdays from now. That's May 13th at 7:30 p.m. The Lyric Theater on East Avenue, which I'm embarrassed to admit I still have not been in. So how's the space, guys? I hear awesome things about it, yeah?
It's stunning. It is a magical room. Just being in that room is worth the price of admission alone, never mind the stories.
Well, after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back and hear Miriam Zinter describe the process she went through. And she is part of the 2017 cast, so she can't give away the whole story, but I'm going to try to get as much out of her as I can and talk much more about motherhood, the value of listening to your mother. I think about my own mom and the value of listening to her, and I still do. So let's get our only break of the hour and continue on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, another candidate for mayor of Rochester joins us. It's the Republican who has declared for the race, Tony Michikay. He's a county legislator. He'll tell us why he decided to run for mayor of Rochester. In our second hour, have you ever wondered why it's sometimes difficult to find good children's books? Well, Children's Book Week is here, and we're going to talk about that and much more. Talk to you Wednesday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. 13 mothers will be presenting their stories in the 2017 edition of Listen to Your Mother in Rochester, and Miriam Zinter is one of them. And Miriam, we've talked on this program before. I see you on Twitter all the time. But I'm so excited to see your presentation this year. And I know you can't give away everything here, but why don't you take me through why you decided to audition in the first place and how you kind of thought about the various ideas that you could present?
Well, it's interesting because I had not heard of Listen to Your Mother, and I'd gone out to lunch with a friend of mine, and we were talking about motherhood, and she said, oh my gosh, your stories are so funny. You should go and an audition for Listen to Your Mother. It's an amazing experience. It takes place the Saturday before Mother's Day. It's a wonderful thing to do with your mom.
And you didn't know what it was at the time?
No.
You were like, Neil Patrick Harris is great in it.
So yeah, totally how I met your mother.
Totally different thing.
So anyway, I was in Malaysia away, and it was time to sign up, and she knew my email address, so she signed me up. And then when I came back, she called me and she said, I've signed you up and you have an audition slot. You better write something. And I said, what am I going to write? So I wrote three pieces. The first piece had to do with when my son was young and no one teaches you how to be a mom. And I would find myself like needing him to take a nap. And so I would just be yelling through a door while I held it shut. You need to sleep. You've got to sleep. And then a disembodied part of myself would look down and think, if you were his babysitter, I would so fire your ass. You know, it was just, so I wrote a piece about being just not a good mom. And then I wrote a piece about my mom, and she was a beauty queen in Haiti. And, you know, I mean, Haiti, third, you know, developing nation, half the time she didn't know where her meals were coming from, yet there was time to be a beauty queen. And all of that growing up with a mother who used to be a beauty queen and all that brought to the table. But, you know, that didn't, neither piece really touched me. And so I was walking back from getting tacos for lunch, as I tend to do, and I was thinking about a conversation that I had with a friend about when I found out my daughter had been bullying another little girl, and how disappointed I was and shocked and horrified, and how I looked at that as being an opportunity to really teach an important lesson that I think everybody can learn, particularly now.
Wow. Wow. And that is, that's really opening it up, Miriam. I mean, I admire you. I mean that very sincerely, because, you know, my son's five. I mean, I'm sure there will be moments in my future where I find out he has done something I don't particularly love. It happens probably just about every parent. But as you say, this is a really sensitive moment with bullying in this country. How old is your daughter?
Well, now she's going to be 20 on May 8th.
She was how old at the time? I'm sorry.
She was in the second grade.
All right, second grade. Mm-hmm. Second grade. Wow. So was that hard to write about? I mean, did you wrestle with that at all?
No, because it happened in the past, and I knew the outcome of it. And whenever you find out that your child is acting inappropriately or doing something, it's, you know, looking back now, because my children are in college, it's a real opportunity for us to show, as moms and as dads, as people in a community, to show what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, and to really make an impact, not just with your child, but to also make it very clear that they have a responsibility to let other people know what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, particularly when it comes to how we treat other people.
An amazing theme. Sarah, I imagine there aren't a whole lot of themes in right down this alley. I mean, I don't know if unique is the right word for it, but I haven't heard much in this direction. Was this an easy choice for you?
It was, of course, an easy choice. Mm-hmm. Now, Miriam came into our audition and shared what a funny person she was right from the get-go.
Yeah, she is hilarious.
So we were caught off guard at the powerfulness of her message. Mm-hmm. I will say part of that mixtape, part of that quilt is really critical. Miriam's piece is really critical because there is this theme around acceptance, treating people with kindness, treating ourselves with kindness, and acceptance in general. And so her piece is sort of a cornerstone piece in there. How we treat folks. We've got a few folks that are talking about stories related to immigration and motherhood and just sort of in general how we're thinking about kindness and acceptance.
So Miriam is contractually obligated not to give away too much of her presentation, but I am going to ask you a few questions, and you can plead the fifth, but let me just ask you a few questions then. As a parent, you know, I wonder if, maybe not for you, but for some parents, when you get that phone call that your child has done something you wish they hadn't, take bullying, you know, some parents may have this desire to say, well, that's ridiculous, or, you know, that's not my child, or to justify it in some way, because it's probably hard to own the fact that occasionally our kids mess up. I mean, I probably brought all kinds of furrowed brows to my parents over the years, and I really admire them more as time goes on. But did you feel any desire to say, wait a second, what's the real story? My daughter wouldn't do that, or to justify it, or did you want to try to rectify it? What was your mentality?
I think it's really hard for a parent to call and tell another parent that their child is misbehaving. So when you look at that, she's not getting anything out of it. And if anything, she could have met, I mean, sometimes people think an apple doesn't fall far from a tree. If my daughter was behaving like that, then there was probably a good possibility that I was also a mean person. And that phone call took a lot of courage on her part. So knowing that and how difficult the phone call from her must have been, I knew that something had to have happened, and it was very important for me to talk to my daughter about that situation. So, you know, that's what I did. And yeah, you know, you find out, you know, growing up is complicated. I'm still trying to figure out who I am sometimes. And especially when you're a kid, you try on different personalities like you try on clothes. And some of those personalities are the cool kid or the nerd or the bully. And a lot of times, you know, kids who are bullies one day might find themselves on the other side of that. But it's important. I think that for anybody, including myself, I think most people have been bullied. No one forgets the name of their bully. I mean, I'm 53, and I still remember the name of the person who bullied me in the seventh grade. No one forgets that. And I think it's really important to address things from the perspective of how it made you feel and not allow that cycle to continue.
Guys, you would not believe it if I told you my bully's name. It's almost like it's right out of a comic book. It is the most cliche bully name ever. It's an actual person's name. I'm not going to say it on the air.
Oh, shoot.
I don't know where he is today. I don't track his movements. Yeah, there have been some really great moments in my life where I had a boot connecting with my head and my head connecting with a locker one time. Yeah, you don't forget those things, right?
No.
I should write it down for you just so you could see it. Not for the, it's amazing, the name.
You'll be auditioning next year.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know. But I agree with you on that. You know, those are certain things you never forget. And I just, I admire the way that you reacted to this. Only because now, you know, you see, the one thing you don't want to do, at least I don't want to do, is I don't want to judge other people's parenting. It's so easy. The mom wars they talk about and all the, it's so easy to be so judgmental on how people parent. But I do feel strongly about being accountable. And if your child has bullied others, you know, doing your best to say, I love you, but not acceptable. I witnessed it recently with a friend's child who was bullied. And I thought the child's mother who had done the bullying did a remarkable job on reaching out and what can we do. It doesn't always happen that way, though, you know. And I wonder, Miriam, if you don't respond that way as a parent and you don't show that accountability, what does that plant as a seed for later in life? Do you think about that?
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I thought about, particularly because sometimes you'll listen to other radio shows or read the comments of things, and people say things like, well, your snowflake better buck up, and you know, I went through it, so it makes you stronger.
Snowflake.
And you know, no, it can really affect somebody psychologically to be bullied. And I never understood that I went through this bad time. Ergo, you must go through a bad time, particularly when it comes to someone's own child. You should be trying to make the world a better place. And it starts with you, and it starts within your family. And hopefully that seed spreads. And I think that's also part of the whole Listen to Your Mother event, that our experiences are shared experiences. But there are also experiences that listening in, you can grow stronger as a community. And I really think listening to the stories that the women are telling this year and the stories I've listened to from past years, they really have life lessons that help us grow stronger as a community.
Have you talked to your 20-year-old about
absolutely
doing this?
Yeah. And I talked to the mom of the woman who called me back then and her daughter, and they have tickets. They're coming.
Get
they're coming
out
to
of
the
here!
Show.
That is
yeah.
so cool.
So
okay.
Yeah. Very all right, excited.
So no surprises for anybody. Raise down. Okay. And by the way, my bully's name is not like Bully McHead Kicker. That is the only more wow. name of a bully. Wow. This is the actual name I'm showing the
that is pretty comic booky.
That's an actual name.
I'm writing that down for a story.
Yeah, don't share it out loud, though, because I don't know if he could come back for me. Who knows? We're talking about the Listen to Your Mother event that's coming up on Saturday, May 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Lyric Theater in Rochester. You just heard Miriam Zinter giving you a small taste of talking about her story and how she decided to tell that story and the value of it. I mean, listen, I mean, Sarah, we're all talking not just about Miriam's story, but it's kind of universal, isn't it, the themes that you're hearing there?
There really are these threads of uniqueness and threads of commonality. And one of the commonalities is motherhood is complex, that we should not love every minute of it, and we don't have perfect relationships with our mothers or as children, with our mothers. And so that's a commonality. But writing down and being self-reflective of our own experiences or of our own relationships allows us, and in a vulnerable way, right in front of 650 people, allows us all this gift of feeling more connected to trueness, to authenticity, versus handing your mom a wonderful Mother's Day card and taking her to brunch. And IMEG sort of created this saying Mother's Day deserves more than brunch. And it really is a meaningful way to connect over Mother's Day weekend.
All right, Robin, had you heard Miriam's story yet?
No.
Aren't you so excited to hear more now?
Yes, I have my tickets. I will be there.
And Sally, what about you? You're a co-director, so you know these stories.
Yes, yes.
How powerful is this story to you?
Oh, it's hard to put into words. It is really a unique story, and I can't wait for people to hear the whole thing because it has an empowering lift, the whole story, the way Miriam handled that situation and the way she tells the story.
Do you worry, Sally, given, you know, talking about Oscar and, you know, kids aren't always as understanding about other kids' medical situations, things like that, though I do believe, and maybe this is the optimist in me, I think we're getting better. I think we are becoming a more inclusive society. You have to teach kids to hate others or to, you know, but there's also, as Miriam said, part of life where you're growing up and you try on different things, even if it's not a great fit for you. So maybe kids will say cruel things at times. Do you worry about that?
Sure. I mean, I can't help but worry about that. But at the same time, I have met countless children who have wheelchair envy. Several of my friends and parents have said, oh, my kid told me they really want a wheelchair, which I just love, too. And we have Oscar's. Cool. He got a new power chair last year, and we have his old one, and we're thinking we should invite some friends over to play.
Give it a spin?
Yeah, absolutely.
that is so cool. And so let me ask the co-directors, just to give us a little taste on other themes we're going to hear. Again, 13 presentations, right? That 13 yes. pieces yeah. you're going to hear. Yeah. All of them around 5, 6, 7 minutes or so, something
yep.
like that?
Yep, around 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, all around 5 minutes. So if you go to the 7:30 performance there, the 7:30 showing of Listen to Your Mother, what do you expect the runtime of the total show to be?
It's about 90 minutes, no intermission. Again, that mixtape, it sort of takes you on this journey and pieces that you'll really connect with and pieces that you'll appreciate but may not have a personal connection to. But we hope that they're moving in every way to people in the audience.
All right, so Sally and Sarah, a mixtape isn't just a good range of songs or ideas, but it's thoughtfully composed with how it starts, how it flows, and how it ends. Is that true as well?
Yes.
For the, yes?
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
What are some of the themes? Sally, what stands out to you? What are some of the themes we're going to hear on Listen to Your Mother?
Sure. We have a piece, Mother Technology and Me, which is a very fun and funny piece. We, as I think Sarah mentioned, we have a couple stories that have something to do with immigration. So that's a pretty interesting theme. We have a story of parenting a teen, so that kind of piggybacks on Robin's last year of the tween years. And there really is quite a range. It's a movement, and I would expect that most people in the audience will find themselves at one point or another tearing up, and at one point or another laughing hysterically, and at other moments just kind of sitting quietly and reflecting on you know, the thoughtfulness of the words that are being shared.
I think the other piece, too, that while this year I'm running through the cast, I think everyone in the cast happens to be a mother. But this is the first year that that's happened in the last two seasons. Is there one?
One
okay.
who isn't.
Okay. So you don't have to be a mom. We've had gentlemen present. Yep. We've had folks that are talking about their own moms and their relationship. So that happens again this year.
Yeah.
My mother is such a cartoon character, she probably would not want me oversharing about her. But it does make you think about our own moms and just the amazing things that they do for us and how we don't probably think about that quite often enough. Can I ask you also to kind of weigh in, and I'll start with Sarah and kind of go around the table. You know, we talk about, I kind of brought it up briefly, some people call them the mom wars, the mommy wars, the way we can judge others. And I think it's one thing to raise a child the way you think is the best way. It's another to really start kind of looking down your nose at other parents in different ways. Does that come up in any of the presentations? Has it come up? And how concerned are you about the so-called mom wars? Sarah?
You know, I don't know that this has come up in our past seasons in an overt way, although there are different ways of thinking about and feeling being a parent or having a relationship with your mom. Because this task ahead of people is so personal and so vulnerable, they're talking about themselves. They're talking about who they are in their story. And so it's not there's certainly no advice giving. It's really about self-reflection. Yeah.
And outside of the show, mm-hmm. outside of this program, you know, what do you make of the pressure that moms can feel sometimes?
Well, so I think about this a lot in my position at the Society for the Protection and Care of Children, and we think about sort of what good parenting looks like, what it looks like across cultures, what it looks like impacted by poverty and trauma, particularly in my work, and how we can have a spectrum of parenting while also knowing some things that kids really need, like emotionally available parents, parents that have enough food so that they're not worried about where they're going to eat, parents that are connected and they've got systems around them that can help. So there is the spectrum of parenting that can look like a lot of different ways, but yet kids need particular things. They need kindness and they need structure and they need parents to be available and have systems to support them to do that.
Sally, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think that what's really special about this show, I feel that the cast just really connects with each other. It's really a remarkable bonding experience. Having sat in the audience the first year, having, you know, been in the cast last year, and now being part of the production team, the next thing that happens after auditions is that we bring the cast together for a read-through. And most of the people have never met each other before. They sit down at a table and share this extremely personal story. And there is just an immediate respect and bond that is created at that table that just carries throughout the whole presentation and, you know, experience of the show. Sitting on the stage, you know, all of the cast members sit on the stage while each other person is reading. And just sitting on that stage last year, next to all of these other folks who were sharing their very personal stories, that in itself was really powerful and just creates an incredible sense of community. And we were all telling very different stories, coming from very different backgrounds, and yet we were all connected ultimately with telling our truths. And I think that's where the power lies.
Robin, I think about your description of the way you self-analyze, and maybe every parent has doubt about, especially in the tween years and the teen years, am I handling this moment correctly? That's enough pressure we put on ourselves. We probably don't need more from the rest of society coming down on us. What do you think?
I guess through this, all I've gotten is support. I have never felt that I am the only one going through it. I've actually just been told over and over that this is completely normal and that I shouldn't put so much pressure on myself.
And you know, Miriam, I think of the way, I mean, I know you consume a lot of media, the way sometimes the media sensationalizes parenting. Well, you do. You just you're very smart. You're incredibly well-read. I follow you on Twitter. That's a good thing. That's a compliment. And, you know, Time Magazine has done a lot on sort of the mom culture wars and helicopter parenting, tiger moms, all these things. I think the more we do that, the more we sort of encourage people to choose, is this the right way? Is this, you know?
I think the mommy wars is very similar to the war on Christmas. I just don't think that some of these things exist. And I think that
ginned up by the media?
I think it's another way to try to separate women. That's how mm-hmm. I look at it. I look mm-hmm. at it as, oh, she's working. She thinks she's better than you. Oh, she's staying home with her children. She's raising. It's ridiculous. We all do the best that we can with what we have. And I think when it comes basically down to it, most people would like to be good. Most people want to be happy, and they want their families to be happy and live in a safe community. And anytime I see people trying to be divisive, I dismiss it. Because the people that I know, whether they choose to stay home or they choose to work, love their children and want the best for them.
I want to squeeze in one phone call of a woman who I asked to call this program. Because when I found out that she was one of the moms who made the cut and she is presenting, I said, Evie Fanning, you have to call. Evie Fanning is a local teacher. You've heard her on this program discussing issues related to literature, plagiarism, things like that. She was a part of the 2016 books, as we talked about books at the end of the year. And I did not know, Evie, that you were doing this until recently, so I'm so glad you called. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Very good. We've been hearing some extraordinary stories, and you are not allowed to give away everything on what you're going to be presenting on the 13th, but take me through it. Why did you decide to audition, and how did you decide what you wanted to talk about?
I made this decision like I make most decisions because I'd been drinking. And I know several of the women who are involved with this, and the conversation that I've heard over the years about this show has always made me jealous, you know, and envious of the community that they form and the stories that they tell each other. So there was a spot for an audition, and I signed up for it. And one of my favorite parts of that has been that deadline and that audience has made me write a story that I've really needed to write for a long time. And I don't know if I ever would have done it without this push.
Knowing, for example, your daughter a little bit, I fear for her future boyfriends, but I don't know if that's what you chose to write about. Can you give me a general view of the theme?
Yeah, it's, can I give you the first line?
Sure.
My essay starts with this notion that I come from a long line of women. And so, you know, there's a little bit about my great-grandmother and my grandmother and my mother and kind of a hint about my daughter, for whom you fear because you have a son her age.
That is true. A very sweet boy who doesn't know what would be in store for him. But you, do you want to give us a line? Or go ahead, Evie.
That was it. It starts to come from a long line of women.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of about this line, this lineage, this heritage that I have acquired and the ways in which I hope to pass it on to my daughter.
Awesome.
Her story is amazing.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's really great. Mm-hmm. Sally, you want to give us just a quick thought on why Evie made the cut?
Oh, her beautiful writing, of course, regardless of what she was saying.
Yeah.
Yes. Regardless of the content. But her theme of it truly spans what the show is about having a mother, about your mother having a mother, about this lineage of motherhood, mm-hmm. and then being a mother, and sort of what we carry with us. What makes us tick, what makes us strong, what makes us vulnerable.
Yeah, it's awesome. Evie, I have to say, too, I'm kind of conducting a little family research project where I'm trying to preserve some interviews for, I don't know, the rest of the family forever, I guess, of all living family members, you know, their stories growing up. And I wish all my grandparents are gone. I wish I had done that. And I got to thinking about, I know my mother. I knew her mother a little. She was gone by the time I was 14 or so. I did not know much beyond that, you know, her mother and her mother's mother. And it gets to a point where I don't even know names or where people lived. And that's not that far removed. So you're already making me think about multi-generations there.
That's the idea. Yeah. And I remember my grandmother dying and having exactly these thoughts, like I should have asked more questions, because now I have questions to which there are no more answers. You know, those stories are gone. So I'm grateful for this show and this opportunity to talk about these things and this encouragement to look into our families and our mothers' mothers so that we can, you know, remember them, but also write them down for people who won't have a chance to experience them.
I joke about your beautiful daughter, but mostly I just admire you. She's an awesome girl. She's going to be an awesome person.
Thank you. She is going to be a handful, though.
Strength is celebrated. That's good. But I hope, Evie, that eventually, you know, she'll be able to watch this kind of presentation and look back and think about, you know, her mom telling this story and valuing those things, because I think that will instill in her a sense of value to know more and to listen more and to reach out more. So that'll be great. So last minute, Ev, so you've heard some of the others now. Have you guys gotten together to read?
I have.
What do you think?
It's awe-inspiring. It's humbling, and it's inspiring and paralyzing at the same time.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Thanks for calling in. I twisted your
Thank
arm,
you.
But I'm glad. I know everyone has such high praise for what you do and your writing. So we'll see you at the Lyric
Thank
Theater
you.
On the Saturday the 13th.
Can't wait.
Thank you. That's Evie Fanning, who is one of the presenters, one of 13. So if you missed it earlier, here are the details. May 13th, two Saturdays from now, 7:30 p.m. at the Lyric Theater. And the show is Listen to Your Mother. It's the third Rochester version, third annual, but there are 30 cities around the country that are doing this. It's a great idea. It's about 90 minutes long, 13 women, and you've heard some of the themes that you will hear that night. Just beautiful stuff, and I just want to thank our guests for being here. Robin Flanagan, thanks for sharing your story. Just really beautiful. Thank you for
thank
taking
you.
The time to do that. Miriam Zinter, have fun. I know you are going to do that, and thank you. Thanks for coming in and giving us a little taste of it.
Thanks, Evan.
Really appreciate that. Sarah Fitzgibbons and Sally Bittner-Bond are co-directors this year, and just really appreciate what both of you have done. Thank you for coming in, Sally, and also thanks for sharing on your personal story as well. Really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I do want to point out that the show will be ASL interpreted and that the venue is wheelchair accessible.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And Sarah, thank you. Congratulations on the success of the show.
Thanks for having us.
Check it out online. And it is, oh man, I had it right in front of me. Sarah, what's the website?